Good afternoon, and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. You can find the club on the internet at commonwealthclub.org. I am Howard Leach, former United States Ambassador to France, member of the Commonwealth Club's Board of Governors, and your chairman for today's program. And now it is my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker, the Governor of California, Arnold Schwarzenegger. As the sun rose over Sacramento early one morning last month, weary California legislators approved a state budget, ending nearly a year of political brinksmanship. Governor Schwarzenegger swiftly signed the budget into law. Now it is the voters' turn. On May 19th, California voters will be asked in a special election to vote on six measures that will cap state spending and revise funding decisions previously made at the ballot box. Next year, related changes to the state's constitution will be put to a vote. While everyone is relieved that the state finally has a budget 9 months into the fiscal year, many questions remain about the complex package of agreements. What does this budget deal mean for California? What kind of reforms should be enacted to ensure this isn't a sequel of the saga that we've all been watching? At this critical time, we are fortunate to have Arnold Schwarzenegger as the governor of California. We are honored to have Governor Schwarzenegger with us at the Commonwealth Club today to explain the budget and the ballot propositions to us. Please join me in giving a warm welcome to Arnold Schwarzenegger, Governor of California.
Thank you very much for the nice introduction. I really appreciate that. I want to thank a few people for being here today. First of all, thank you very much, Ambassador Leach, then Greg Dalton, the Vice President of the Commonwealth Club, and Charlotte Schultz, my Chief of Protocol, who is sitting out here in front. Thank you very much for being here today. Then Gloria Duffy, the President of the Commonwealth Club. Thank you very much. And Richard Goldman, my old buddy and great environmentalist. Thank you very much for being here today. And there's so many other people here. I want to thank all of you. And it is great to be back here again at the Commonwealth Club. The Commonwealth Club always brings me good luck, I have to say. You know, every time I come here and talk to you about all the great things you're trying to do, we win our initiatives or we win the election or whatever. So thank you very much. It's delighted to be here today. Actually, after months of budget negotiations, I'm delighted to be anywhere as far as that goes, let me tell you. The negotiations were worse than sitting through my first movie, Hercules, in New York. And let me tell you, when I say that, that means a lot. So, but we negotiated for 3 months, and we reached an agreement, and it was worth it all. Because we now have real budget reform measures that will be on the ballot on May 19th. And there were heroes in the process of getting this agreement done. In fact, Senate Republican leader David Cogdell lost his leadership post because of it. He took a bullet for the budget, and he should wear actually a scar as a badge of honor. Now, as I watched the pressure put on my Republican and Democratic colleagues, it was amazing to see that, and it was made clear, there was one thing that was made clear, and that is that our state capital is a town that feeds on dysfunction. The special interests, left and right, need the process to be dysfunctional. This is how they control Sacramento. This is how they prevent change. Now, I happen to be a big believer in change. My whole life was about change. You can imagine, I mean, imagine it is that the change of what we had. For instance, the change of my country. We could have changed my body. Good voice. I'm impressed. She could have been going to Vienna. Very nice. This brings a little bit of entertainment to the whole thing. I like it. But anyway, as I was saying, my whole life has been about change, because I could change my country, I could change my body, I could change my citizenship, my career, everything. So of course, at one point I said to myself, Arnold, you could actually go to Sacramento and you could change government. But then I became governor. And let me tell you something, it isn't that easy. I went to Sacramento to fix California's budget problem. And every year I would get some incremental reforms passed, but still the problem got worse and worse. As a matter of fact, I remember in 2004, weeks after I was first elected, I went to the legislature to get budget reform, but it was defeated by the special interests. In 2005, I tried to circumvent the legislators and go directly to the people, but that was also defeated by the same special interests. They spent more than $100 million to do so. But now, finally, we have an agreement passed by two-thirds of the legislature that puts on the ballot serious budget reform, including a spending limit and a rainy day fund. In the very interest, the far left and the far right, that prefer dysfunction over change, have already launched a campaign to confuse the people and to defeat the reform. But this time, they're not going to be successful. Like the redistricting measure that passed this last November, we tried five times until it prevailed in November. And this time, the forces of change are going to prevail once again. Now, let me explain to you how we came to this historic and important point and what comes next. California has not had a rainy day fund since Earl Warren was governor back in the late 40s and early 50s. I mean, think about it. For six decades, we have been struggling because the state has not had a responsible financial system. And so what happened? Well, when the economy goes up and increases revenues, all of this money gets spent. And then when the economy goes down, we don't have enough revenues, and then governors are forced to raise taxes. As a matter of fact, Governor Pat Brown had to raise taxes. Governor Ronald Reagan had to raise taxes, and so did Duke Majan and Pete Wilson and Gray Davis and Arnold Schwarzenegger. Even though I try to make myself feel better by noting that they're just temporary taxes and they expire in 4 years. But why? Why over all of these years and all of these governors did we have this problem? It's the system. You see, it's the system. It's because the special interests force the state to spend more and more and more. And without a spending limit, there's no way that for the revenues ever could catch up. I mean, when I was running for governor, I was actually adamant. I said that we'd never raise taxes. I also made, luckily, another promise. I said that they would always do what was in the best interest of the people and the state of California. And this promises turned out to be in opposition of each other. So I asked myself, which one do I keep? The specific one or the general one? I wrestled with this, and in the end, I made the decision to keep the larger promise and to do what was right for the greater good of the people and the state. Now, back when I was running, I was asked to sign a pledge not to raise taxes, and I said I would never sign a pledge because I didn't want to be constrained if there ever was a disaster like an earthquake. Well, it wasn't an earthquake, but in a way, a disaster happened. The state of California faced insolvency. In a way, the combination of California's revenue collapse and our housing collapse, our credit collapse, our global economic collapse was a disaster. But these are just word games in the end. While there are more spending cuts than there are tax increases in the budget, there's nothing good to say about either the cuts or the tax increases. But there was no other way out. This was our only way to get out of this mess. $42 billion deficit. I mean, let me just explain to you how big $42 billion actually is and what we were faced with. If we had tried to solve the deficit by spending cuts alone, we would have had to close our entire state university system, cut off all welfare assistance, and shut down all mental health services. The magnitude of those kind of cuts would have caused massive social unrest. We could have also fired every single California state employee. There are over 200,000 of them, and we could have still not even come close to balancing the budget. Now, those who say that we could have balanced the budget through spending cuts alone are guilty of political cynicism at worst, at its worst. Those are not serious people. On the opposite side, of course, if we tried to solve the problem just with tax increases alone, we would have had the highest sales taxes, the highest personal income taxes, and the highest corporate taxes in the nation. So those who say we could have balanced the budget with just tax increases alone reveal their total economic ignorance and lack of math skills. Their grasp of economics must have come from living in a hippie commune or something like that. The bottom line is that we had to do both. We had to go and raise taxes and cut spending. And we also enacted government efficiencies and economic stimulus measures. And a very important part of the budget deal was that we agreed to budget reform so we can stop the budgetary dysfunction once and for all. Now, this reform is not a cure-all. We will still have the deficits and we still will have surpluses. We will still have the economy go up and the economy go down. But over time, the rainy day fund will smoothen out the roller coaster ride in our revenues. For example, 10 years ago, during the stock market and the dot-com boom, tax revenues were falling out of the sky. As a matter of fact, our revenues that year increased by 23%. 23% increase. But it was all spent. The legislators were so happy that it was rolling naked in all of that money. Now, the most fun, of course, they had, like I said, was spending it all. Spending it and spending it. But it is not fun when you realize the trauma that it caused by ripping away those revenues when the market goes down. How do you run an education system when you hire teachers and then at mid-year the money for them is ripped away? That is no way to run anything. Not the schools, not the prisons, not the healthcare system, especially not the state. Never again do we want to find ourselves wandering around in another $42 billion valley of doom. In fact, if our budget reform was in place over the past decade, our deficit this year would have been much more manageable, at $5.4 billion. So let me explain to you how all of this works. Instead of trying to write our budget by predicting what our economy would do, we would instead use the last 10 years of revenues as a benchmark. We know that over the 10-year period, our revenues go up by an average of around 5% a year. So why should we spend more than that? Under our new plan, this money will flow in, and it is above the average. It will go directly into our rainy day fund. And in addition, 3% of each year's revenues will automatically also be transferred into the rainy day fund. This will give California the largest rainy day fund in the nation, equal to approximately 12.5% of our general fund. The money will be locked away, only to be used if the state finds itself running a deficit. And there will be no loopholes there whatsoever. And even then, in the future, governors and in the future legislators will only be able to pull out enough money from the rainy day fund so that the spending keeps in pace with population and inflation, but no more. This is how we will limit our spending. States that have a rainy day fund are doing much, much better than those that don't. And we also know cities in California that have a rainy day fund are doing much better than those that don't. We need this discipline, ladies and gentlemen. Now, many of you probably can relate to a little story I'm going to tell you, an example, because many of you have pets. In my house, for instance, I have dogs, Labradors, and I'm responsible for feeding them every morning. If I were put out a whole week's worth of food, the dogs would eat it all, and then they would have no food left for the rest of the week. Well, let me tell you something. Food, dog food, tax revenues, it's the same thing. Perhaps it's not a good example because I can see already some smart aleck reporter saying, "Governor compares legislators with dogs." But I would never do that because I love my Labradors. Instead, let me use another analogy. When I was a kid, I frequently, as I could, I would put 5 or 10 shillings in Austria in a bank. It was a savings account that got the high interest rates, but it was locked for 2 years. You couldn't use that money for 2 years. This made sure that I could save up for the bicycle that I wanted, and the gym equipment that I wanted, or anything else that I wanted. It didn't tempt me to take that money away, because otherwise I would have never been able to save any of that. It is human nature to be tempted. This budget reform stops the temptation. Some on the far right, of course, are against this. They're against our proposals, because they say that if you vote yes on the reform, you're voting a temporary tax increase on yourself. But they're wrong, because the legislators, by 2/3 vote, have already agreed to do that. No matter how you vote on the reform, yes or no, taxes will be increased temporarily. It's just a matter whether it's 2 years or 4 years. But a yes vote, and this is the important part, a yes vote limits the booms and the busts of the past. And a yes vote gives more stability to our schools, into law enforcement, into healthcare, and especially to our state. And the yes vote puts our great state back on the path of prosperity. If we were ever to cut taxes in this state, which, by the way, we must, the only way to do that is if we first have a spending limit in place. So I say to my fellow Republicans who oppose this, you cannot have it both ways. I know where you're coming from, but you cannot keep saying that you are for spending restraints and spending limits and then vote against one. And there are some, of course, that are on the far left, who also oppose those reforms. They're the special interests that I talked about earlier, who want the state to spend more and more and more. And many times I've talked about them and referred to them as spendaholics in Sacramento. They know that if they spent, eventually taxes would have to be raised again. So they want, of course, no restraints on spending. They just want to spend. Their approach is, when the money pours in, spend it all, spend it all, and spend it all. So, ladies and gentlemen, I can tell you, we need this budget reform. And I'm going to do everything that I can. I'm going to go all over the state letting people know how crucial it is to putting California back on track. Now, there are 6 budget agreements items that are on the ballot. All those items that are on that ballot are interconnected with one another. So you can't just go like a grocery store and pick and choose. You got to vote for all 6 of them. They're interconnected. Taken together, they are the agreement that ends the current budget deficit and changes our approach to budgets in the future. Now, this is something that is huge. This is historic. This is something to celebrate. Of course, we don't want to celebrate before May 19th, before we have the election, but then afterwards, hopefully, we will celebrate. The legislature has voted for a spending limit and a rainy day fund with teeth. And now the people just need to approve it, need to ratify it. We have a little over 2 months before the special election. To the people of California, I say, I need your help. I need your help. I need your help just as I did for redistricting reform, just as I did for the infrastructure bonds to rebuild California. For 5 years, ever since I first was elected, I've been pushing for those kind of reforms and those kind of changes. At times, I have been as frustrated as the people by the slow pace of our progress. But I'm not frustrated today. No, I'm not frustrated today. I feel good about the changes that this budget reform will bring to our state. So, ladies and gentlemen, Sacramento may be an immovable object, but together we can be an irresistible force. With this reform, we can regain control over our budget. Let us not fall back into the chaos. Let us pass the reforms and move forward. This is the moment. This is the moment to act. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks to California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger for his comments today here at the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Greg Dalton, Vice President of the Club, and now we will have our question and answer period. Governor, welcome back. It's good to see you again.
Thank you.
We have a number of questions that fall into 3 general categories. There's sort of governance and the political process. There's the particular ballot measures that are on the special election in May. And then there's specific issues such as health care, education, et cetera. So let's try to structured in those 3 areas. The first one is from the audience says, During Tom Campbell's talk to the Commonwealth Club last month, he stated that he went back to Gray Davis's last budget, factored in inflation and population growth, and extrapolated that number into today's budget. Campbell, the former finance director and current gubernatorial candidate, concluded that if you had stayed within the parameters of Gray Davis's last budget, we would have a $1 billion surplus. Do you think that's true?
Well, I mean, first of all, there was a lot of information that he put out there, so I have not looked at these numbers, but one thing we know for sure, that our spending, since I've come into office, we have increased our spending only by, I think, 3.8%. There's always a misconception out there that, that people say that I spent as much money as Gray Davis or as previous governors, but mine was actually 3.8%. I think that there were Pete Wilson that had 4.9% spending increase, and then it was Ronald Reagan that had like 12 or 13% spending increase. So we tried to be very cautious and not to spend too much because we knew the problem would arise. And the other thing that I know is that if we would have had, as I said in my speech, if we would have had the budget reform in place, we would not have this huge, huge problem right now with the $42 billion budget deficit. If we would have had the budget reform in place that we are proposing here, we would only have a $5.8 billion budget deficit. So you can see the huge difference, because it's very clear, as we have struggled through this, that California has always traditionally had the big problem, that when we had a good economy and the revenues increased by 14% or sometimes, like I said, by 23%, we spent all of that money. Rather than just keep spending just the 5% increase that we have over an average of 10 years and take everything else and put it in a rainy day fund. So when the economy goes down like right now, then you have that money available. As a matter of fact, there are charts in the back that you can see on this side of, on the right side of me, you can see the chart that's very clear that shows how up and down the revenues go and how disjointed in fact the revenues are from our spending. You have here in red the spending. You can see in the end how far this is apart from the revenues. And so if we just go and try to create a straight line that comes up here, to bring the spending and the revenues together, that is what we are trying to do with the rainy day fund. That's what it's all about. So we are not really limiting spending because overall it will be the same spending. We're just trying to ease off and try to get rid of those jaggedy edges, those peaks and valleys, and try to create more rolling hills, or like the Austrian Alps, so to speak. So that's really what we are trying to create here.
A big part of the package was some money from the federal government. You were back in Washington recently, quite outspoken about supporting stimulus money from the federal government. So what is the current status of that? It's about $31 billion. And will that be enough to keep the state out of the red?
Well, first of all, let me just say that we did not work on a budget and calculate or think that the money from the federal government is going to save us all. We put a budget together that did not rely on that money. But we also put a trigger in that in case the money comes, that we will use some of that money to get rid of our borrowing of the RAW, what we call the Revenue Anticipation Warrant, and which is around $6 billion, and also to replenish our reserves, and then to take the money down that we have that we have in tax increases, and also the money that we do use in a reduction of programs and so on. So we help on those kind of things. So we have around $8 billion or $10 billion. There's still not really an accurate number there of how much it is. So we are going through that right now. But whatever it is, we are trying to get as much money from the federal government as we can in order to help to stimulate the economy, to create jobs, and also to use for our budget, basically. And there are some governors out there in America that say they're refusing to take that money. And I said in Washington at the last governor's meeting in Washington, I said, I take the money. If you don't take the money, I take the money. Because we in California, we're very happy because we know that we need the money, we need the infusion of capital, and we need also the infrastructure money that is coming from the federal government. because every $1 billion that we spend on infrastructure, that creates 18 to 25,000 new jobs. So it would be crazy not to take that money. Every dollar is welcome, and we are fighting for to get more dollars from the federal government because California needs it.
Another question on that topic. This week, the Legislative Analyst's Office said that federal money available to address the state's budgetary problems would be about $8 billion, less than, I think, the $10 billion which was hoped for built into the budget, which triggers additional cuts in taxes. Do you think that's accurate and likely?
Well, like I said, we don't know yet exactly what it is. We believe it's around $8 billion. There's some people that believe it's around $10 billion. But we are still going through those numbers and studying it because it's all new. As a matter of fact, we have several people from our administration back in Washington right now to really look into it carefully and to look at how much money comes through to us in for the budget and also for education exactly and for infrastructure bonds, higher education, healthcare. There's around $18 billion alone for healthcare. So there's altogether, I think, around $50 billion that will come to us and $35 billion in tax benefits to the state of California.
Some talk in Washington already of yet another federal stimulus plan. Do you think the first one was big enough? Do you think that there should be a second federal stimulus to help the states and the overall economy?
Well, as you know, I think that experts would tell you that the stimulus package that has just been approved, it's not all a stimulus package. There is probably, in a definition of stimulating the economy, there's probably one-third of that that is really stimulating the economy, and the rest of it is for other projects. So I would say that it could easily be that by the time this is done and this money is spent wisely, and I think that the most important thing is for the American taxpayers is to have proof that this money gets spent wisely and there's accountability. And it's not just you're throwing money out there and we are paying those taxes and this money is not spent the right way. I think it's very important that this money does stimulate the economy, that people are being put back to work, and that we're using that money the right way to really move our states forward and to also move the country forward. And so I think if all that is done and if that's done correct, I think they should by summer look into if they need not maybe another stimulus package that is that will create jobs as quickly as possible, because the key thing is that the money can be used immediately, because it doesn't help us at all if it is a stimulus package if the money can be used maybe in 3-4 years from now. By that time, the economy will be back. We know that. So I think we need the money now. And this is why during our budget negotiations, we also fought for CEQA reform and permitting process reform, because sometimes the permitting of infrastructure, of transportation projects, takes years and years and years, and then people can hold you up in court, and then takes another few years. So what we want to do is we want to get this money to work right away and start building roads, and start building tunnels and bridges and on-ramps and off-ramps and all of those kind of things. Build school buildings, build university buildings. Let's put people to work now.
Question from the audience is, it appears that Sacramento faced polarized views on the role of government in solving economic issues. How can you improve the political divide? Another question about whether Republicans have an answer or a policy other than just adamant opposition to any new taxes.
Well, I mean, you could see that, first of all, I was very proud of the legislators that two-thirds of the vote, we got two-thirds of the vote to approve the budget. So that is extraordinary, because this is, we are unlike any other state. There's, I think, only two other states that need a two-thirds vote to approve a budget. All the rest of the states have just a simple majority. So to get a two-thirds vote is miraculous. We got that two-thirds vote, even with the tax increase that the Republicans hated and with the spending cuts, which Democrats hated. But they got together and they looked at the situation, the $42 billion deficit, in a realistic way, and they knew that they have to come together if they don't want the state to go off the cliff. And so there were several of the members that they really struggled with that, including myself. I struggled with it because I don't like to raise taxes on people. But, you know, there is a time where you have to say, okay, do I want to get stuck with my ideology, or do I want to go and do what is best for the state at this particular time? And so I think that we found the Republicans and we found the Democrats to bring to get this two-thirds vote. So it was really, I think, a great accomplishment. And I'm the first one to always criticize the legislators. But in that particular case, I think they have done an extraordinary job on that, and I'm very proud of them. Now, I think that someone like myself that sleeps with a Democrat every night, I think I have the best qualifications to bring people together, Democrats and Republicans together. So this is why, you know, I don't look at the Democrats in Sacramento as like the other side or like the enemy. I look at them as partners, as much a partners as the Republicans are. And the key thing is to bring them together. And I understand how difficult it is for them because the way the redistricting works, the way the district lines were drawn is that the Democrats are locked into their own districts and the Republicans are. And so in order to win in a Democratic district, you have to be far to the left. And in order to win in a Republican district, you have to be far to the right. So now you go to Sacramento and you're that far apart. How are you going to get them together? So the political system doesn't allow them to get together because if they would compromise, they get punished by getting voted out the next election. So what we have created is basically a system where you get punished for compromise and you get rewarded for getting stuck in your ideological corners. And that's why I've campaigned ever since I came into office to get redistricting reform. It has lost 5 times. People always ask me, the press asked me many times, why would you go back? Haven't you gotten the message? And I would tell them, I said, I came from the lifting background. I said, I tried many times to lift a certain weight and I couldn't. I failed. 10 times. But the 11th time, I lifted it. And I learned my lessons from sports that you never, ever give up. And we went back, and the redistricting won this last November because of the people's help. And we were inclusive. We brought everyone in, and we finally won. So that will really open up that and will bring people together. And the next thing, of course, is that's something that will be on the ballot next year in the spring, which will be open primaries, which is another thing that we have to do in order to open it up and to bring the both of the parties closer together, because I believe of what Eisenhower said. President Eisenhower once said that politics and policy is like the road, that the middle is drivable and the left and the right is the gutter. And that's exactly what is the reality. The middle is where the action is.
So are you confident then that some people call it an open primary or a top two primary that'll be on the ballot in June of 2010? Are you confident that will get bipartisan support?
It definitely will get bipartisan support, but the actual parties, the Republican Party and the party officials and the Democratic Party officials will fight it because they like to have the power. The power is always, the parties always have the interest of having the power with the party and not with the people. So as soon as you bring both of those parties closer together, that means that the people have the ultimate power because you get the most action and it's the most competitive. But the more they can keep it separate, the more they keep fighting, they feel like they have the power. In order for someone to win a primary, you have to go to the party and you have to stay true to the party ideology. That's when you can win the primary. So they don't like open primaries because you maybe are then in the middle, in the center, and maybe someone that's a Republican all of a sudden says, well, you know, if there is a tax increase necessary, I will do that. And the Democrat may say, look, if we need to make spending cuts, I do that. Well, that's a no-no for their parties, of course. So that's why I think parties will fight it. But I think that the people of California in the end will be smart enough to look through that and to do what is best for the state of California.
Some people use an equation which is redistricting plus primary reform plus term limit modification. We've talked about two of those. If the primary reform passes, do you think term limits should be modified or revisited?
Absolutely. I think that Speaker Nunez was absolutely right when he had it on the ballot to do the term limit reform. His mistake only was that he didn't include the redistricting reform with it, to show to the people it was not done out of selfish reasons, but that he was interested in really helping the whole state have a better political system. So because he didn't include the redistricting, the press and everyone attacked him and said it is out of selfish reasons. He wants to stay in long in office, so he's doing it for himself, and so on. So that's why it lost. But I think that we have to, again, go back to term limits and extend the term limits because let me tell you something. The attempt that the Californian people made that do shrink the term limits for the legislators was a good attempt, but it failed. What happened now is that in Sacramento, the special interests out there and the staff have much more the tendency of running the capital and running the state than the politicians, because by the time you get with the program, by the time you learn the complexity of what's going on inside that building and to really understand the complexity of how everything works, it takes 2 to 3 years. And in the meantime, it's the staff that runs everything and gives the legislators advice. So they are very, very strong with the way they lead. And so it's common knowledge that now those forces are the ones that are really running things. And the legislators don't have the chance as much to participate because it takes them too long to get up to speed. And by the time they're up to speed and really are getting on a roll, they now are termed out and they have to leave. They have to interrupt for 2 years and then they go come back from the assembly and then run for Senate and so on. So I think it's a disservice to the California people. I think that we should open it up again and extend those term limits. It was a good try, like I said, because we always have to try to see what works best. There's nothing wrong with doing something, trying something and not it working out. I think we should go back and reform that.
Do you have specific ideas about the number of years? Some people have suggested 14 years in either chamber rather than splitting it up chamber by chamber. Do you have any specific ideas?
I think it really doesn't matter. I think that as long as we can keep them in the assembly longer than the 6 years, and that as long as we can extend those terms and the time so they get good practice when they come in, and then they can go and really participate and get smart in a specific field, if it's in finance, or if it's with environment, or in energy and transportation, whatever it may be, specialize in those things and understand the overall thing. It takes time to do that.
We're discussing California governance and budget with California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger at the Commonwealth Club. I'm Greg Dalton. Another reform question is the two-thirds. You mentioned two-thirds, which goes back to the two-thirds majority to pass a budget and raise taxes in California. That goes back to the 30s. There may be, I believe, a budget initiative on the ballot next year to take that down to 55%. That has failed in the past. Do you think we should revisit the two-thirds requirement?
Well, I personally believe that the problem is not in a two-thirds vote. The problem is that we have people that are so far to the right that Republicans cannot win in their district if they vote for a tax increase, even though the state needs one, and even though they come to me and say, I know that we need tax increases in this case because we can't solve it, the $42 billion just with cuts. It doesn't make any sense mathematically. That's what we need to do, but I can't vote for it because when I go back, I lose my next election. And the Democrats also have that same problem with the spending cuts. You will find them, they've struggled over this because they feel like when they go back to the district, they will lose the election. So what we have to do is not worry about the two-thirds as much as worry about, you know, getting the two parties come together closer and be able to compromise when you have a situation like this budget crisis, where you don't have to wait for 3 months to finally get the action and finally get the budget done. It's the ideology, and it is because the way the redistricting works.
And redistricting has passed. There's still a lot of work to be done there in terms of the mapping and choosing the commission. Are you committed to following through on the implementation of redistricting?
I'm a follow-through guy. You know, I always stick to all the things that I start. That's the only way I became a champion. That's the only way I became successful in acting and in everything that I've done. I never start things and then just drop it. I always go all the way, and I go all the way with all of the reforms as far as that goes, because there's many more reforms that need to be done. I think that eventually the state of California has to look at this constitutional convention, to really look at the whole thing, the way government works in California, because there's many aspects of government in California that is dysfunctional. I mean, just alone, when you look at the constitutional offices that we have, you sit there, you try to make decisions, and they're not always on your team because they may be from the opposite party. So it's just there's many things at the Capitol that could be done better, and so I think a constitutional convention will be the right way to go to really debate all of those issues and have the brightest people and the scholars from the various different universities to deal with that and the George Shultzes alike, you know, come together and look at it in a serious way, and also the initiative process. I mean, think about it, that we have, we have maxed out with the amount of borrowing and with our bonds, and then anyone that has the money could go on television in the next election and get another $10 billion or $5 billion in bonds passed that maybe doesn't make any sense for the state, but just because they have the money, and you go past the limit of your deficit, so of your debt. So, I mean, there's things that ought to be looked at and corrected.
We have a lot of questions here about education, and education is, I believe it's 1B, is one of the measures on the ballot. This question is, California's public school system is corrupt and overpaid. Bureaucrats are sucking tax dollars. Other people are concerned that say that studies have shown that each dollar invested in the California State University system returns $4 to the California economy. Isn't it time, despite the huge deficit, to make a major investment in education, research, and ultimately the economy overall?
Well, I mean, I think that anyone that makes those recommendations, I think there's no one that would disagree in this room that we need to invest in higher education and we need to invest in education in general, kindergarten through 12th grade and career tech education, our community colleges, all of those kind of things. The question is always, where do you get the money from? I mean, it's like, you have only so much money. Like this year, we have dealt with just the $90 billion instead of the $104 billion that we're supposed to have. And so that's the real challenge. So when you get forced into having to cut $17 billion, you have to cut it from everywhere. You cut it from prisons, you cut it from law enforcement, you cut it from healthcare, you cut it from education, kindergarten through 12th. You cut it from higher education, from all of those different areas that are the big groups where you need to cut, including, having revenue increases of, like we have $12.8 billion of revenue increases through taxes. So I think it's always easier said than done to say, shouldn't we invest more in a higher education? Or shouldn't we take more money from the prisons? Why are we spending more money on prisons than higher education? But then when you ask people, do you want to let those prisoners out? Do you want to let rapists out? Do you want to let murderers out? Do you want to let the people out that have broken into your homes and have damaged your property? I mean, do you want to have them back in your neighborhoods? You say, no, keep them locked up. I say, well, if you keep them locked up, then you have to pay for those prison guards, And we have 170,000 inmates that are locked up. And yes, there are judges out there right now that talk about, letting out 30,000. But let me tell you something. Attorney General Brown and myself and my administration and the legislative leaders are fighting that because it's not so easy to just pick 30,000 inmates and say, okay, go back to your home or go back to some local facilities. It's very difficult. So we just have to make sure as a state to be as creative as possible with how to stimulate the economy and how to stimulate businesses. And this is why, for instance, I was over in Germany just recently because Germany made California this year as the official partner of the CPIT conference, which is the high technology conference and exhibition over there in Germany. It's the biggest one in the world with 100 countries coming together. I took 61 companies over there to Germany on a trade mission to open up with Chancellor Merkel the trade show. And they're hopefully, drumming up a lot of business because I'm a big believer in trade missions to go overseas and to sell our products. We have the best products in the world, and we got to go and make the world the marketplace. And the more we do that, the more revenues will come in because the more businesses will be created, the more we stimulate businesses in California. So that's what we are trying to hit it from every angle to create more business and more revenues in the state of California so that we have that money. And so we bring back the economy so we can afford the higher education, community colleges, career tech education, kindergarten through 12th grade, and all of those things.
Another question here about healthcare. You took one pass at healthcare reform, and this question from the audience says that Mark Leno's office has proposed a universal healthcare package for California. With failing Medicare, Medi-Cal programs, and a large number of Californians uninsured, is your office proposing a change to the healthcare system of California?
Well, first of all, let me say that we tried very hard. We worked for 2 years to bring everyone, all the stakeholders together to have healthcare reform. It didn't pass, but that doesn't mean that it won't pass in the future. We're going to continue on working on healthcare reform because we have 6.7 million people in California that are uninsured, and each one of you is paying for the uninsured. It's a hidden tax. And most people don't recognize that, that they are paying for the people that are uninsured. So it's to our interest to make everyone have health care insurance, to make it mandatory that everyone has to carry health insurance, and then to bring, of course, the health care costs down. And I think this is what President Obama is right now struggling with. That's the challenge to have on the federal level. And I'm very happy that the federal government is now copying, or I should say got inspired by a lot of things that we are doing in California. If it is health care reform, if it is merit pay for teachers, if it is the whole pushing of charter schools, if it is rolling back the greenhouse gases to the 1990 level, if it is the tailpipe emission standards, if it's the low carbon fuel standard, all of those things originated in California. The things that we have passed or we are on the way to pass, also with renewable energy, to have the portfolio go up from the 2.8% of renewable. We have already almost 15% in California, and we will have by 2020 33% of renewables. So California is very aggressive with all of those things and show great leadership in the world. And so now the federal government is following us, which is really good, including healthcare. So we are looking forward to working with the Obama administration on all of those things, because to me, there is no such thing as the difference, you know, that I'm a Republican, he's a Democrat. I think that we have to make the Obama administration the most successful administration ever, because then America is going to be successful and we are going to be huge.
Just to go a little bit deep on healthcare, during the campaign, President Obama did not support a personal mandate requiring individuals to get coverage. Hillary Clinton did. He's now changed. I believe the California plan had a personal mandate, and employers had to pay or play. You still think that's the right way to go?
Yeah, it's the right way to go. And let me just tell you, the reason maybe why he was not for it was because labor in general is against it, the individual mandate. And the reason why they're against it is not because they want to be obstructionists. The reason why they're against it is because we were told by them when we had our meetings, endless amount of meetings, that they felt that that's a good idea if the healthcare costs come down and the premiums for the insurance come down. Because you can't go and force a person to pay, let's say, $10,000 a year on premiums when he only makes $20,000 a year, so it doesn't make any sense. So they were concerned about that. How do we go and cover? So we have built into our system a way of supporting them and giving them a subsidy if they fall short with their own personal income and so on. So there's a way of working around it. The key thing is that President Obama is now for individual mandate, and that we work with labor together to make them also come up with some great ideas on how do we go and help those that don't have those kind of salaries and can support that. How do we work together? And that's what we have done with all of the stakeholders. If it is the the consumer groups, if it is the medical association, if it's the hospital administrators, the owners of hospitals, you know, the federal government, labor leaders, everyone, we brought everyone together on the table. And we made them recognize the fact that not each one of them can get a 10 out of the reforms. If you ask for a 10 and what's best for your group, that's not good for the other group. That's not good for the other group. So you have to go and settle for a 7. Let's just get everyone insured, and let's go and make sure that our healthcare costs come down, and let's make sure that no one can get turned away again by any doctor or any hospital because of a previous health problem that they had and because of a history of maybe a heart problem or cancer or something like this. It's the worst thing that's going on right now is that people get turned away because they have had some history, medical history, that they think maybe can flare up again, and all of a sudden you can't get insurance. So it's unfair, but the only way that we can afford that everyone has to be taken by them is if everyone has insurance, because then we have enough money in the pot to go and cover all of the people and have no more excuses why someone shouldn't be covered. So I think that this could be the year of healthcare reform. And like I said, we are going to work with the Obama administration to get it done, hopefully for the state and for the whole country.
You mentioned the labor unions. In 6 weeks, Californians will go to the poll, and it's not yet clear what labor unions will position they will take, whether they will spend and oppose some of these measures. Where do you think labor will come down on this election, and are you talking to them about some deals to keep them on the sidelines?
No, I'm not talking about deals because you're not supposed to do that anyway. You know, to make deals with them. But what we have is, let me tell you, unlike 2005 when we had the last special election, we have much better relationships with labor because we are much more inclusive. I personally have learned, because like I said, it's an on-the-job training. There is no school for being a governor or to be a mayor or to be a legislator or anything like this. So I learned that to say that this is my way or the highway, all of those kind of things maybe was the wrong approach. And so we are much more inclusive now. We bring them in. We listen to everybody. And I think that even though, you know, they maybe have been against, you know, those kind of budget caps or spending limits and those kind of rainy day funds against that in the past, it could very well be that maybe they'll see that because of this economic crisis that we're in, that everyone now suffers because we don't have a rainy day fund. So I always explain to everyone, if we would have a rainy day fund, we wouldn't have the $42 billion mess. We wouldn't have to make those unbelievable cuts because we wouldn't have spent all the money when we had those upsurges in revenues. We would have put it away into a rainy day fund. So I think that they maybe understand that and then communicate with their members. And hopefully, we hope that everyone endorses it, obviously, because the more endorsements we get, I mean, we were very, very happy to get a tremendous amount of endorsements from the Chamber of Commerce, the California State Sheriff's Association, the California Chief Probation Officers, Steve Wesley, who is a Democrat, and Tom Campbell, who is a Republican. We have the Small Business Action Committee, the California Business Roundtable, the California Alliance for Jobs and Labor, California Fire Chiefs, the California Police Chiefs, the California Senior Advocates, the Central California Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, and the list goes on and on and on. So we have, you know, there will be some people that will be against it, they will come out against it, as it always is with elections and with the initiatives, and there will be a lot of them that will come out in favor of it, like you have heard. You gave me the opportunity, so I did my little advertisement and little promotion here. Perfect. Of how many great, great endorsements we have already. So
I think some people have noted that some of the firefighters and teachers, which were against you a couple of years ago, are now on board with you this time.
That's
around.
Right.
Another question from the audience. Considering the present and future financial morass of the state, would it now be a strategic time to repeal Proposition 13? I would add either or to split the residential and commercial parts of Prop 13.
Well, again, I have never looked at that as the solution to our financial problem because we have revenues coming into our state, but we are irresponsible the way we spend the revenues. If we would spend our revenues in an average of 5% increase a year, just like we see that the average revenue is coming in at a 5% increase, rather than having all of a sudden 1 year a 13% spending pinch, and then another year like we had in 1999-2000 when the revenues went up by 23% and it all was spent. You cannot sustain a business this way, and you cannot sustain a state this way. We have a terrible budget system, and that is what needs to be fixed, and this is why we are going after this, and that's why the legislators finally have agreed that we have a terrible budget system, that it needs to be fixed and do what other states are doing, and then I think that we will be a much more stable economy, a much more stable budget system, and we will not have to always start, taking money away from education or taking money away from healthcare and all those programs and making those unnecessary cuts. So I think that's where the action is reforming that rather than Proposition 13.
Would you be willing to consider a multi-year budget and forecasting and pay-as-you-go provision?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that we have, you know, tried to do that as much as possible to look further ahead. But, you know, you can never predict the economy. I tell you that I've had a meeting with our economic advisors. And I was sitting in my office and I asked them, this was in 2007, and I was asking my economic advisors, what does the future look like so we know if we should go after more water infrastructure, we should do healthcare reform, do we have the money, how does the economy look? And every one of those economists said, well, first of all, Governor, in the next 2 years, there is no problem in sight. No problem in sight in America or around the world. Now, we feel bad that we can't predict beyond the 2 years. But the next 2 years have nothing to worry about. And literally 2 months later, we have seen the revenues come in $200 million short. And then 2 more months later, they came in $300 million short. And by December, there was $600 million short of what we projected. And the disaster began. And so that is the kind of... So again, you know, it's very hard to predict those things. People were caught literally, you know, with their pants down on this. Because even in Washington, when we went back there for the governor's conference, the people that were, you know, experts in the housing market did not foresee that. They knew that the balloon was getting blown up and it was getting bigger and bigger, and that it was stretching. That if they would have, you know, increased the interest rate a little bit, that the balloon would have shrunk a little bit. It would, but what they did was they started pushing that money out and giving money to people and loans to people for homes that didn't have any guarantee of income, they didn't have a job, they didn't have any assets, they didn't have any equity or anything else. That they just pushed the money out there. And so eventually the bubble burst and the whole thing collapsed. And so I think that, you know, people just didn't see it coming.
We're discussing California finance and budget with Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger at the Commonwealth Club. Money is not the only crisis in the state. A couple of weeks ago, you declared a water emergency in California, and you have a $9 billion bond proposal to address the state's water issues. We have a question here about the delivery of water to farmers. It will be the biggest problem in the state. So what are you doing about water, and is the $9 billion in big dams and canals really the right thing to do now, given the budget situation?
Well, first of all, let me say that it is a shame that it always needs a disaster in order to get anything done. I mean, I remember that when I came into office, one of the briefings that I got was that we need to rebuild our levees. That the levees were 100 years old in California. They were built 100 years ago by farmers, and they're very, very vulnerable. And they're eroding in some areas, and if there's one earthquake or a major storm, some of those levees could wipe out, therefore, hundreds of thousands of homes. Now, I'm talking about something bigger than Katrina. Well, no one would listen. They say, what are you talking about? We got to go and give more money to education, or we got to give more money for this, but what are you talking about the levees now? I mean, gee, you know, and they were rolling their eyes. Then Katrina happened. And then all of a sudden, the next day, I got endless amount of phone calls. Says, what were you talking about, the levees? He says, we don't want to have the state of California go through what the New Orleans just went through. I said, I talked to you about that a year ago and a half a year ago. Now you're calling me. But anyway, we got then the money and the agreement of $4.6 billion of levee repair within a short period of time. So that's the way you get things done. It's sad, but I mean, that's just the way it is. The same is with the budget reform. I guarantee you that this budget reform would have never happened with 2/3 vote if we wouldn't have been in a crisis and if the other side wouldn't have needed also tax and revenue increases in order for us to come in and say, well, we would do that, but let's go and reform then the budget so we never have this problem again and we don't have to go back to the people always for tax increases. And then they agreed to that. But, I mean, in the past, they have not agreed to that. So crises bring opportunities. I always said that, and I always see that. And the same is with water now. I've been saying for years, as a matter of fact, when we did our infrastructure bond money in 2006, November of 2006, I negotiated to have water be part of that. But the legislators were concerned, and maybe rightfully so. I'm not blaming them for it, but they were concerned that the $37 billion infrastructure package was getting too big. And so they said, let's take the water out and let's take prisons out. And let's just keep this package to $37 billion. Well, since then, we have been trying to get the water back on board. And I knew that we will have a drought coming because our water experts have predicted that. And I kept saying to them, I said, we have a drought coming. There will be a time where we will be doing rationing of water and where the water price will go up and where it will be
terrible, devastating for the farmers because they will not have enough water. And that will mean that we're having self-inflicted wounds, because if we don't let our farmers grow their crops, then we have a problem because they can sell it, and that is billions of dollars of revenues to the state of California. So right now, we are having problems and getting businesses and developments get their projects approved because there's no source of water, no new source of water. And the farmers now have been cutting back with their production, and that is a loss of billions of dollars of revenue. So when you talk about self-inflicted wounds, there's a lot of things that happen in California that we have no control over with the national, international economy going down. But there's a lot of things that we do have control over, and that's one of them. We got to be careful. We got to be way ahead of the thing, because it takes us at least 3 years to go and to really start a water project. And that is why it is important that this year the legislators get together. Dianne Feinstein, Senator Feinstein, and myself have gotten together as a partners and have come up with a really great proposal that is water conservation, number one, number two, to fix the delta, number three, to build the water delivery system, and to build a below the ground and above the ground water storage, which are reservoirs all over the state of California and some bigger ones, so that when we have the runoffs of the snow, and when it rains, that we can capture that water. Right now, that water goes into the ocean. It's wasted water. So we don't have enough, because we have a water system that is for 18 million people, because it was built in the 60s, and now we are 38 million people. So we need to upgrade this system, and it would take, to build it all would take at least 15 years. So we got to start now, because I'm not interested in only trying to accomplish things while I'm in office, but I'm thinking way ahead. What is California going to look like in 2030, 2040, 2050, when we will have 50 million population in California? So we got to think ahead, and this is why water reform and to build water infrastructure and to make this agreement now is extremely important.
We've reached the point for just one last question. And from the audience, the headlines today talked about 5 feet sea level rise in 2100. $100 billion in property damage. And this question from the audience says, please drop the global warming baloney and get the problems in California's budget taken care of.
Well, I mean, it's interesting that when you hear about the water rising and then someone says drop the baloney and global warming, it just shows that how out of touch some people are. Because, there's some people that still believe that the earth is flat. And there's some people that just don't want to recognize the changes that are happening. I mean, we know that fossil fuel and coal and all of those things have made us very successful in the industrial age and the revolution. And we have benefited the last 100 years from all of those things. And we didn't know any better. So we verschmutzed the world and we created global warming. But now we know. Now we know much better, because the science is behind us and the science is telling us that there's global warming, and here is what we need to do. And this is why I'm so proud of California, that California, the legislators, and both of the parties got together and we did what was right to do, which is to make a commitment that we're going to roll back our greenhouse gases by 25% by the year 2020, which is returning to the 1990 level, and then an additional 80% by the year 2050. We have really made a huge commitment there, and we are again following through with this, and the rest of the world is looking at us for leadership, because we are inspiring other countries, including the federal government in Washington that was asleep at the wheel for years and years and years under the previous administration. Now finally they're waking up. And so we are partnering with them. So we got to do everything we can to fight global warming, because the disaster that could come with rising water levels will be devastating. It will cost us a fortune when that happens. And, there's predictions. So we are in California. We're doing everything we can. And so for me, I have spoken at the UN last year at the opening session to warn and to inspire the other 190 countries I said the other 190 countries as if California is a country, but you know something? We are. I always tell everyone we are a nation state. I mean, forget the state. We are a nation state. We are big, we are powerful, and we have a presence. And our power of influence is an equivalent to a continent as far as that goes. So I think I was there to inspire the 190 countries to go in the same directions that we go, to find a solution to the developing, so that the developing nations and the developed nations can all work together. That's the important thing. So, but I think that this is all about working together, confronting the situation, and recognizing that there is such a thing as global warming. So anyway, on the end, I just want to say, I know this is the last answer and the last question that you had for me. I just want to say again, thank you all very much. You know, the action is not here. The action is with you. You have tremendous amount of power. The people of California have unbelievable power. When you go to the polls and you speak, that is power. So I just want to ask you, be our partner in this. Let's reform our budget system and let's get really our act together here and to have stability in our budget and in our revenues, in our funding of programs and all of this. Let's stop sending those programs like education and law enforcement and the prisons and everything else on this roller coaster ride where no one can predict the future and there's always instability. So with your help, we can do it. Thank you very much. Thank you.